For decades, there have been dystopian novels, movies, comic books, songs. For years, governments have been stymied by corruption, military stalemates, gridlock. In 2008, the entire global economy took a giant nosedive. One can realistically ask, after the dysfunctional 8 years of Obama and congressional gridlock, the bizarre paper money printing policies of the Federal Reserve, what's holding all this together? Doesn't feel like democracy is, or brotherhood, or national unity. What is it? Well, 3 weeks before the 2016 election, British filmmaker Adam Curtis released his new documentary, Hypernormalization. Striding along past Brexit, the rise of Donald Trump, the horrible war in Syria, terrorism, the star of this film is the state of intense anxiety and the feeling of helplessness this has all caused. Fortunately, Curtis argues that in the face of an increasingly complicated and complex world, the West has turned to politicians and economists who have a simplistic view of how things are and how they will go. Essentially, he says, we're living in a fantasy world that is all but doomed to one day catch up with reality.
Up to this point, we've had this idea that somehow we can see the world as a system, whether it's what they used to call globalization, or whether it's the economic financial system that promised stability through all those technical systems, or through intelligence agencies like the National Security Agency, who promised that they can listen in on calls and spot all terrorists. Well, none of them have actually managed to achieve any of that. They didn't see the Soviet Union collapsing. They didn't see the coming financial crisis. And even the head of the National Security Agency has admitted on a number of occasions that despite all those terrible surveillance things that they're doing to us, they've never found a terrorist as a result of it. So what I'm really saying is that we've lived through this age of these experts that seem to offer simplistic answers that enable politicians to avoid complicated and difficult questions of power. And the problem that the politicians are now facing is that they gave power away to a dream of technocratic stability with no picture of the future, none. Even Donald Trump doesn't really have a picture of the future. It's all about how can we keep this thing stable? And no one's got an answer for what people really want, which is a sense that actually this thing that you call stable is actually rather scary and we don't like it. Give us something else.
One of the things that I find really fascinating about your work is the way you view artists, particularly critical artists who fancy themselves as, you know, guardians of this impending destruction. Patti Smith, for instance, appears in Hypernormalization.
Yeah.
But you seem to have a certain contempt for these artists who don't really want to change anything. They're kind of celebrating everything going down. What do you mean by that?
I mean, you have to examine really what are the great myths of our time, the things that we all believe in. And I think one of the things we all believe in the West is that being yourself and expressing yourself is the central thing. We all believe that. At the point that people like Patti Smith rose up in the early 70s in New York, what you were seeing was the collapse of an old idea of how you change the world. The old idea of how you change the world is you come together collectively and collectively you have power. If you are an artist expressing your disaffection with the world, you're not that powerful. I mean, you might get a lot of sort of mentions in Dazed and Confused magazine, but you won't change the world. And I mustn't blame Patti Smith alone. What I'm really saying is the shift away from collective action to self-expression has weakened the idea of changing the world. I am dubious about radical art, however beautiful and however clever it is, ever being able to really change the world. But when I say that, the artists get very upset.
What about satirists? Are they feeding the same sort of thing?
As I was coming here, I was looking at the recent copy of Rolling Stone magazine online, and it had a headline which said, "Welcome to the ignorant world of Donald Trump." And I thought, that's an interesting view of the liberals. If you really want to connect with those people who voted for Donald Trump and you want to try and change their mind, it's a bit rude. You remember all those shows? We have them here and you have them with people like Jon Stewart. Over the last 10 years, they laughed at the ignorant people, didn't they? They thought they were really stupid for supporting the Iraq War or supporting George Bush. They laughed at them and they laughed at them and they laughed at them. But that laughter, satire, is supposed to change things for the better, isn't it? That's the underlying idea, isn't it? It must be. Otherwise, why are you doing it? But it didn't. That laughter really changed the world in another way. It pissed a lot of people off. And at the moment, what you've got in America is the left might be walking into a terrible, terrible trap with Donald Trump. I mean, they're quite right to protest against his banning of Muslim people. But look at what he's doing. He is vaulting over the heads of... He's appealing over the heads of the Republicans in Congress, over the established political structure, and he's appealing to people out there in the middle of America and saying, look, see what these people I told you are doing. I want to make America safe. Look, they're laughing at you. They're laughing at you. So what the left are finding themselves doing is in a terrible trap. The more they protest, the more they're falling into the vaudeville that Donald Trump is creating, where he's saying, look at these people, look at these people. They're laughing at you. They're being nasty to you. They don't want you to be safe. And the problem for the left, and this goes back to the idea of self-expression, is self-expression is not enough. What you have to have is an alternative vision of the future, which you can also leap over the established political structure and give it to those people out there. You don't say they're ignorant. You say, look, this is a world that we could create together that actually is better than what Donald Trump wants.
All right, finally, then, before we go, I'm willing to bet that you are either just another one of these very clever, artful, kind of grabbing corporate symbols and saying, oh, the corporations are a conspiracy, this is a conspiracy, and putting together these very clever films that just sort of take everything that we see in marketing and popular culture in the world and just setting it up as this kind of frightening, oh my God, they've got our minds. But in fact, everything will just kind of go on. It really isn't going to change that much. You're right, but we're not on the edge of collapse. Or... we are, and what's next is the Visigoths. Any clue on who's the Visigoths that are going to come and take over?
No, I don't. I mean, I think what I try and do is what the BBC sets out to do, which is to try and make you look again at what's happening and try and provoke you. The function of journalism is to imaginatively pull back and show to people the dimensions of the world as it is today. And I would argue that there are two things sitting in the back of people's minds today. One is an anxiety about the future. They have no picture of the future and they feel anxious and uncertain. And secondly, a feeling that there are a lot of these things around them are not just slightly odd, they're fake. Now, I don't think that can last. And I'm not saying you're going to go down in some terrible apocalypse. All I'm saying is you've got to recapture politics and a vision of the future. And until the liberals and the left do that, you're going to get pantomime figures like Donald Trump holding them in his grasp. And that's not a great future. And people want change. They just do. You can feel it.
Adam Curtis, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.